Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. Can an education be considered complete without lessons in creative thinking? When money to fund schools runs short, strapped administrators often look to arts programs as safe targets for budget cuts. But as my guest today will tell us, a growing body of research demonstrates that the arts not only provide intrinsic value, but in fact help strengthen and build engagement in so-called core subjects like science, math, and language. Steve Seidel is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and former director of Harvard's Project Zero. Gigi Antoni is president and CEO of Big Thought, an organization based in North Texas and committed to creative learning in schools. Welcome, both of you, to Think.
Thanks, Chris.
It's great to be here.
Wanted to say this edition of Think is part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. I want to start with this very basic question, because people think arts and education and they think, okay, we carve out a discrete hour once a week, once a day in ideal circumstances for music or visual arts or drama. What are we talking about beyond that when we discuss arts and education?
Well, okay. Great question. I think that part of what we're saying beyond the, frankly, at this point, quite old model of the 40 minutes a day or 40 minutes once a week or all too often the 40 minutes a year, what we're talking about is really reevaluating the possibility space that we have when we talk about the intersection of the arts and learning. And when we look at that, we're looking at the role that the arts play in human life, in our lives. We're looking at the role that the arts play in community life and in the larger society, and asking ourselves, you know, if the arts play a kind of crucial role in human experience, how can that be brought into, in all of its manifestations and all of its richness and complexity, into the educational lives of children? I think a big part of that conversation, Chris, is about what can happen in schools. But we also understand that schools are, a hotly contested space and a space in American society that is trying to find its way, really. Lots of great progress, but a long way to go. So I tend to think about it both in relation to what can happen in schools, but what happens in children's lives much more broadly. I mean, 24/7, when you start to look at the all of their waking hours, you know that kids are gravitating toward artistic experience. Not all kids equally, but virtually every child is drawn to some aspect of the arts. I remember when I was in third grade, our teacher took a survey to try to we must have been a difficult class or something, because our teacher took a survey and asked, was trying to find out, was there anything at all that we all liked? Mm-hmm. And the only thing that emerged from this was, we all love music. And it's really interesting, because I remember nothing else from third grade, but I think the education arts research guy was already inside me, because I remember that survey. So the point is that from very early years all the way through high school, young people have a fascination with art and culture, and they have lots and lots of different ways that they want to participate in it. And I think that our job as adults, as the caretakers here, is to try to find as many ways as possible to meet them in as many settings as possible to try to nurture that.
So in our own community in Dallas, in some of the early work around 2007 or so that Big Thought's been doing in the community, we did a survey. We surveyed over 8,000 children in a variety of ages to try to determine where were kids in Dallas getting this need met. Mm-hmm. And we found some really surprising things. We found, for instance, that the largest instructors of music in our community were actually happening in our churches. So that was where kids were learning about music and how it came together and were practicing and creating music. Our rec centers are big instructors of dance and one of the places where kids are getting dance instruction outside of the school day, which is also very important. And in our community in Dallas, we have one of the only urban school districts in the country that has music and visual art instruction for every child available in our schools, elementary through high school. And that's something we should be very proud of as a community, is that we have been able to provide that for our kids.
You know, what's interesting, Gigi, about the way that you approached the survey, or at least the conclusions that you drew, is that, for example, finding that many students are engaging with music at church, it speaks to the siloing we have. Because I think a lot of parents might think, well, that's church, that's not the same as art. And then there's the question of arts as entertainment, and that overlap. Does that make some parents uncomfortable because they associate certain forms of art with leisure time, with free time, with something other than sort of the work of education?
I think so. I think we don't talk about the very, very important kinds of learning that happen in the arts and how essential they are. Of course, there are, you know, schools often in our suburbs or independent schools where you would really expect to see that as a part of the curriculum. And but in many urban school, public schools in the United States, that isn't the case, that is valued in the same way or understood in the same way. And that's, you know, that's why we should be very proud as a community that in our public schools that is available to our kids.
You know, Chris, it's interesting because I think we've had this issue for a very long time of a kind of common public perception that the arts are not serious. They're not serious work. I've had the incredible privilege, really, of working for the last 25 years at an organization called Project Zero at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And it was founded almost 47 years ago by the philosopher Nelson Goodman, who was really bothered. This was back in the 60s, but he was really bothered by the notion that we think of the arts as some sort of frivolous activity. Now, Goodman was a deep appreciator of the arts. But his argument was this is actually some of the most demanding cognitive work that humans take on. And to relegate it to, you know, sort of it's nice for kids to express themselves. Mm-hmm. It's a good thing to offer when the serious work is done. Really deeply bothered him, and he started at that point a small project to try to understand the depth and complexity of the mind's work when engaged in art. And you know, Goodman left after 3 or 4 years. People have been continuing to engage in the study of that with the desire to say, you know, we really need to understand artistic work and artistic experience in a much more complex way, because it is complex.
Are the methodologies for studying the outcomes for young people who are engaged with the arts in terms of their intellectual growth and what they're able to do, are they fundamentally different from studying how they're progressing in science or math or reading?
Well, that's a great question. If the way that we talk about the basic ways that we study most academic growth, I would argue that the ways that we use to study them, academic growth, are fairly limited. I mean, we have an enormous reliance on sort of the traditional standardized test, which is a decontextualized setting in which you're trying to figure out whether people can very, very quickly figure out the the game of the test, really.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I am always looking, as many people are, for ways to really dig into what are the sources of data we might have that give us a picture of what's going on in a child's mind. And a kind of focus of mine for the last 25 years growing out of early work with portfolio assessment is to really develop methodologies for examining the things that children make in school. You know, it bothers me a lot that we ask kids to make things and then we give them a grade and then where do they go?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I once calculated roughly how many assignments we give kids over 12 years of schooling, and you know, a handful of things make it to the refrigerator. Where did all those other things go? I want to know. And my feeling is that those things are tremendously rich sources of data about children's thinking, and the complexity of their work reveals the complexity of their minds at work and their understandings of the subject matter that we care about.
How on board are teachers in general with, whether in school or out of school, the idea that arts engagement really does have a significant intellectual impact on whatever course material they're trying to convey?
My experience is that they understand that it's important and that they
mine too.
That they wish for, they long for a way to make it more a part of what's going on in classrooms. But there are constraints mm-hmm. that make that more and more difficult for teachers to include it in ways. I'm talking now outside of, say, the 45 minutes a week or a day or however the arts are formally scheduled into a school. So my experience has been that teachers are because the kind of learning that happens is a very real and deep learning when the arts are present in the classroom. And that's what teachers want for their children. They want high engagement. They want kids engaged. They want kids to be thinking complexly and deeply mm-hmm. about what it is. And they want to give kids an opportunity to use the information, right, that they're learning and actually apply it. And there's a kind of learning that happens when you learn something not in the abstract, but you're able to apply that learning. And the arts can be a really great framework for lots of entry places for kids to do that, to learn about ratio and proportion, for instance, and then apply that learning in translating a drawing to a mural, or you know, lots of ways to make information that they're learning in the abstract in the classroom applicable and usable and manipulate that information to create something. And I think teachers are constantly looking for ways to get off the worksheet and onto the wall or off the desk and onto the floor. And the arts can be a really great tool for teachers to do that.
I also think that I agree completely with that, Gigi, and I think also that teachers want school to be a place that kids want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're engaged, any of us as adults or as children, when you're engaged in a project where you are part of a team, you're part of a group, you're working with other people, and you're producing something that is going to be a contribution to your community, whether it's the community of your classroom, your school, or beyond your school walls, when you're contributing, and I mean this when you're 5 years old, when you're 10 years old, when you're 15 years old, you want to make a contribution, you want to feel valued, and you want to have the identity of being part of a group that is contributing. All of this feels good. And in the context of doing hard projects, you can't be given a simple project. You have to be given a hard project. But in that context, you're ready to learn all kinds of things that are hard to learn.
We're speaking this hour with Steve Seidel, who is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and Gigi Antoni, president and CEO of Big Thought. We're talking about the value of arts in education as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. We'll come back to the conversation in a moment and welcome you to join us at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for THINK comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Gigi Antoni, who is president and CEO of Big Thought, an organization based in North Texas and committed to creative learning in schools. Steve Seidel is with us as well. He is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and former director of Harvard's Project Zero. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. I wonder how you feel about this. In my experience, and that is, of course, limited to my own life, another thing that sort of keeps people from feeling that the arts are vital in education is this idea that you have to be sort of innately talented to engage as a creator of arts. Maybe you can be a spectator. Maybe you can be a participant as an audience member. But there, you have to be born with something magical in order to be an artist. And I wonder how educators in the arts have worked with this problem over the years and found ways around it.
We're looking at each other. So who's gonna take that one first? I'll jump in just a little bit and say that the arts are a kind of literacy. They are languages that we express ideas through. And being able to use that language is not necessarily about, in terms of the value that a person gets out of engaging in it, isn't necessarily about being brilliant, being Yo-Yo Ma and becoming Yo-Yo Ma. The value of having the arts in an educational setting is not so that every kid becomes an artist ultimately. It's the value of learning how to use those literacies to find your voice and to be able to express what you think and you feel through a lot of different, the language of the arts are the language of what we're doing right here in this room. It's a language we use in our society every day in 100 different ways. And so we need to be literate in that. And kids who have that opportunity, many of them find a passion and a way to engage that does carry them through, even if they don't do it as a profession. They find their way through life often through a passionate pursuit. And the arts can often be a way people find that, the kids find that as well.
I direct the Arts and Education program at the School of Education at Harvard, and we've got 40 to 50 students in the program each year. And we in order to try to understand the students that they'll be teaching and that they do teach, we talk a lot about our own paths into the arts and into education. And there are always a good number of students in this program who will say, I knew when I was 2 years old that I had to make visual art. Mm-hmm. I knew it. And I don't think that that's a question. Talent is a very, very complicated word. And it's a word that I don't use very much.
An unhelpful word?
I think it's unhelpful because, yes, and I'm glad you put it that way because what I think is unhelpful is the idea that you have it or you don't.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Look, if that was the case, then we could probably figure it out by three and just stop providing any resource to those who aren't going to make it. I mean, it's just the completely wrong notion. I think that notion of whether you have it or you don't isn't just about the arts. It's actually a very dangerous notion for any young people, whether it's in relation to particular academic areas or just to whether you're smart or not smart. Mm-hmm. If you work hard, and all learning requires hard work, right? If you work hard, you make real progress. And you do learn the things that you want to learn. Attending to the idea or the issue of effort and perseverance is really, it seems to me, the message that we want to communicate to young people so that when we praise them, we praise them for their effort, not because, oh, you're so smart or you're so talented. That's the quality that we want every child to take into the rest of their lives, because that's the quality that will get them through the hard and challenging situations that they're going to meet, and the belief that if I do work hard. So I'll give you an example. There's a fantastic education program part of the Shakespeare and Company, which is a professional Shakespeare company in Western Massachusetts. And education is very, very important to the company. They do a lot of work with all ages, but I got to study the high school program that they did. And they do a very interesting thing. They absolutely refuse to simplify Shakespeare at any grade level. So instead of trying to make it easier, they just make it harder. Instead of bringing in one dictionary when they're doing the first reading, they bring in eight dictionaries. And they say, you don't know that word, look it up in that dictionary. But you look it up in the other dictionaries, and let's see how many definitions. And then let's play with all the different possible meanings here. Now, that's counterintuitive when you want to help kids enter into a really difficult realm. But that's what they're doing. And when they do that, they are inviting kids into the authenticity of the complexity. This is what makes kids start to get the idea of this. You could spend your life doing this. And the actors say, yep, you could. We're not saying you should, but you could. And this is what the work is really like. So one of the students who had, been struggling with this text that she was learning, when we interviewed her at the end of the process, we said, so what do you take as lessons from this experience for any other part of your life? As tried to keep it a very open question. And she said, well, I understand now that there is no, as incomprehensible as my physics textbook is, I know that I can learn it and understand it because I've learned and understand Shakespeare's text. If I can do that, I can understand anything.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phones now to Don in Denton. Hello, Don.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm a professional singer, and I will always be grateful to my grade school teachers starting in second grade through the sixth for teaching me the solfege system, the do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. And I lament the lack of that teaching in schools nowadays.
Probably a lot of people feel the same, that there is a different sort of engagement in some schools today than they had when they were kids.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure whether you're lamenting the loss of solfège teaching or whether you're lamenting the loss of any serious introduction to approaches to musical learning. Either one would seem reasonable. I tend to think that, I don't personally feel that there's a single way. I think there are lots of ways, and to introduce kids to music, to dance, etc. And I think it's very important to keep things to introduce kids to as broad a range of possible ways of learning and as broad a range of repertoire as possible. I love Shakespeare, but that should not be the only and steady diet. You should know about the full range of dramatic literature, and you should always, whether it's in drama, art, dance, music, visual arts, you should find work. You should have the opportunity to see work that reflects your experience in some way. Artists who you can identify with, who mean something to you personally, and represent for you the possibility that, oh, wow, this is a world that I and people like me from my community can enter into as well.
Absolutely. I think also that's true, and that's the great entry point then The other powerful thing that happens is giving kids an opportunity to create and express their own ideas and to make art and to do it with rigor and in challenging, complex sorts of activities. So a sort of mirror to the story that Steve told about the Shakespeare High School program mm-hmm. is a program here in Dallas called Creative Solutions that takes kids who are court adjudicated and puts them in a very – it's housed at the Meadow School of the Arts, is the host. Big Thought coordinates it with the juvenile, with our county partners. And the kids come into this program with – almost zero experience in the arts, but they're put in a situation with professionals in music, choreography, script writing, playwrights, directors, and in 8 weeks they mount and produce an original musical full of their own ideas, full of their own, and they're looking at Shakespeare and they're looking back at the traditions. They're finding inspiration from that, but this experience of creating in a very high pressure and high expectations for professionalism and for the level of quality of their work. These kids create a powerful, powerful work every year, and it is for many of them transformative and bridges them back into their communities and into their schools by having had this experience together. So I think it's both sides of that. It's the repertoire and looking back and connecting, but it's also that opportunity to find your voice and know that you can create new knowledge and new experiences.
And you can do things that you thought were impossible.
Absolutely. Every kid thinks that's
impossible. And that scare the pants off you.
That's right.
A little fear is good. We've talked about that. You know, I've had the privilege on this show of speaking to a lot of scientists, and of course I always read their backgrounds. Number one, I'm always struck by the large percentage of them that also have a background in music or the visual arts or something that you don't necessarily associate with physics. And to a one, even those that don't have a strong academic background in these things definitely feel like very creative people. And it's interesting that the outside world, oddly, does not necessarily look at scientists as creative. It's almost like we don't recognize the value that artistic expression plays in a lot of different disciplines that are not creating art as the form of their living.
I can't help but remember reading about a study that was done in London in the 60s with bankers, and it was a creativity test, and they scored way below the expectations of the testers, which were already low expectations. And they said, something's really wrong here. And so they went back and they asked the same people to do the test again, only this time, this was in the 60s, they said, imagine that you're a hippie taking this test. And they all scored fantastically.
So they had it in them. They were just afraid to express it.
Exactly. So context is for the interconnections of their business minds, of a science mind and an artistic mind and on and on. Those things are – they're all in there for us. And the trick, I think, for us as educators is to design the experiences where we get to bring all of those things together. Science, you know, in the real world, science and art are not separable.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Right? It's only in the academic world that we did the great divide, and then we think that that's the truth. But in human experience and in the physical world and the senses, these things are all absolutely interconnected. So our job as educators is to try to trace back to the interconnections and then bring everybody into the room. And people get excited. When you bring scientists and artists together, mm-hmm. not just for a conversation, but to really work on a project, these are excited and happy people.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next on the phone to Barbara in Dallas. Hey, Barbara.
Hello there. I've so enjoyed the topic of your conversation today.
Well, I'm so glad to hear that.
Well, I am a retired French teacher, and I'm proud to say that I took my students, my advanced students, on field trips, like over 20 times, And what we would do is we went to La Madeleine for breakfast, and then we would go to an art exhibit, usually at the Dallas Museum of Art, sometimes at the Kimball Museum in Fort Worth. And if possible, we would get a French-speaking docent, which was cool. And the students would be able to have a little tour. And for so many of them, it was the first time they'd ever been in a museum. And after that, we would go to an authentic French restaurant. And before we went to the restaurant, I would teach the students the vocabulary to use at the table. And they would have to order their meals in French, and I would ask the waiter and the maître d'hôtel, the maître d', to, and the owner, if they would please talk to the students in French. And it was such an awesome experience.
Sounds like a great way of sort of integrating a lot of different kinds of learning.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I also, I mean, part of what I hear in that story is the importance of leaving the classroom. Physically leaving the classroom, going into the community, the resources, you know, even in a very, very well-resourced classroom, with which most classrooms are not, there's just only so much you can bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And getting out is really, really important.
And also bringing the community into the classroom, which is a big part of the work that the community here in Dallas is engaged in doing, is, you know, finding those community instructors, specialists, artists, scientists, historians, and connecting kids to our community resources, our museums and our facilities and our businesses too, you know, seeing how things work in the world and in the place that we're preparing them to be successful, but then also bringing that world into the classroom and making those connections in very intentional, real ways that, again, make learning not theoretical. It makes a different kind of context for kids to understand what they're learning, why they're learning, what they're learning, and how it's applied in the world. And I think that is a really big part of creative learning. It is, you know, it isn't about a discipline, or it is about a way of connecting kids to the community and the community to kids, and making that all real.
We're going to take a quick break here. Gigi Antoni is with us. She's president and CEO of Big Thought. Steve Seidel is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. Our discussion about the value of the arts and education will continue after this as part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. If you'd like to join us, you can email think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with Gigi Antoni of Big Thought, an organization based in North Texas to provide creative learning, and Steve Seidel, who is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, former director of Harvard's Project Zero. And Steve, before the break, we were talking about this idea that getting out of the classroom sometimes can be really important.
Yes, I said getting out is really important. And Gigi said, but you can also bring the community into the classroom.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a very important point. And it's something that is, on one level, completely obvious, because there are lots and lots of people who will make time in their day to come and meet with young people. But we don't take advantage of it nearly enough. I think it is extremely important, because this idea of going out and contributing and bringing the community in it represents a very different image of what the school is and what education can be. I mean, you know, people talk about schools as warehouses for children. And that is the reality in many, many schools. It's a place where you are being held, in a sense, separate from the world.
Mm-hmm.
And there are no young people who are looking forward to that. That doesn't make you want to get out of bed in the morning. You want to get out of bed as you're growing up, and your sense of the world is literally expanding. With
exactly.
each year. And there's so much to discover. And to be asked for 6, 8, whatever number of hours to sit in a room and be separated from that is that's very harsh. And really, if you think of school as, as John Dewey said, it's not just preparation for life, it's life itself. And that means that you have to, a part of the learning experience and process has to be engagement with the world.
So what do we need to provide to community partners to ensure that in addition to loving this thing that they do and wanting to share it, that they can effectively communicate it to the audience of young people that they've gone to speak to? I mean, I've gone to speak to classrooms, and until I was given some guidelines about how to do this, I was a disaster. And I wonder how often that's an obstacle.
Oh, I doubt
that, Chris. I have 4 kids, and they don't pay attention, but that's another story. Yeah.
This is something that at Big Thought we have spent a lot of time thinking about and experimenting with, trying to find the way. I mean, one of the barriers is just the logistics of bringing the community into the school and bringing kids out into the community is big. I mean, that is a big barrier to making this happen. So there are those sorts of considerations. But in addition to that, there is, in fact, preparing both the kids, the teacher, and the community, whether kids are going out into those experiences or the community's coming into the classroom, to make a meaningful connection and for that experience to be enriching on both sides. Just somebody who's eager to go into a classroom and share their expertise needs some preparation in order to be effective in that environment and with kids. They need some training, some frameworks in which to build their experience with kids. And conversely, teachers and kids need to be prepared for that experience too. Some of the very, very early conversations we had in looking at how to make these connections across the community were really astounding. You know, one impactful one that I remember is having a conversation with a child who had been on an experience in the community and had come back out, and listening to that child describe their experience. They were talking about the bus, the cushy seats, the getting to skip school, not being in a classroom and how exciting that was, having lunch on the lawn. Those were the things that this child got out of that experience, which wasn't what was intended.
It's not the target of the experience.
That's right. That wasn't really the learning that was designed by the adults that designed that experience. So being, having those connections, it's really about frameworks, curriculum, timing, when that experience happens in the course of what kids are learning. And that takes very thoughtful and intentional coordination and communications and frameworks to make it really work for both teachers, kids, and community members.
Now, I want to add, if I may, that I think that this is an area that Big Thought's doing, I think, some very important new work in. But the arts in general in education have a half century of work bringing artists into schools.
Yes.
And it's interesting because more than any other academic subject in the school day, the arts have pioneered what it means to bring experts from your discipline or domain into the classroom.
Yes.
There is no teaching scientists movement in this country. There is no teaching mathematicians movement, mm-hmm. but there is a teaching artist movement, and it has a long way to go. But the teaching artist fellowship, which you should mention, mm-hmm. Gigi, that Big Thought has initiated in Dallas, is I think one of the most important developments for that field, because it's really trying. They're really trying to answer your question, Chris. What do people need to know, and how can we develop this field so it's even much more sophisticated than it currently has been?
So this is the program that Steve is mentioning is a one-year fellowship with a dozen of our community artists who made an application, very rigorous selection process, and it's one of the reasons Steve is in Dallas, is to work with these folks. And we are building a cohort of our own experts in our community. We've been doing this for many years, but we bring people in from other cities to do the professional development, to prepare people to go in and have these experiences in schools. And so this program is about investing in a group of people who are willing, artists who are willing to take on the mantle of sharing their expertise with other artists and other, not just artists, but other scientists and mm-hmm. mathematicians. And because I think Steve is right. I think that the teaching artistry movement has a long tradition and some sophistication about how you prepare folks to come in and do this work. But I think that that's transferable to many other expertise. And what we are attempting to do is to begin to build a cohort of folks that can help the community be prepared to go in and work with kids, not just in the arts, but across all these other domains as well.
We have an email here from Josh who says his wife teaches elementary school. One challenge she faces concerns the lack of value the parents of her students place on the arts. How have other educators overcome this challenge?
You know, it's interesting because I do hear that from teachers. But I've also worked with a lot of schools, particularly elementary schools, where teachers and administrators find it very, very difficult to get parents to sometimes to come to like parent-teacher meetings, mm-hmm. So on. But if you have a performance, you get a turnout of parents. So it turns out to be one of the ways that parents actually will come to schools.
Absolutely.
And I think over time, you know, when you watch your children become engaged in something that you may not have had as part of your, your experience in school or you may not value in the same way, I think a lot of adults are, you know, parents are worried that their kids will fall in love with the arts and then they'll be an artist. And
I have to tell you, I was had an experience here in Dallas at the master's program for AP Arts, which is a great program here in Dallas. It's now national. And I'm standing at the Dallas Museum of Art, and there are all these brilliant pieces of art that these young people have done, high school students, and they've been chosen out of all the high school students in the city to have their art at the Dallas Museum of Art. They're standing in front of, and I'm watching this young person, and there's a gentleman next to me, and I said, "Is this your daughter?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, you must be extremely proud of her." And he goes, "Oh, I don't know. She wants to actually go to college and study art." And he said it in this way, you know, that showed that he had a real fear for her, mm-hmm. that making that choice to study this discipline that she obviously was passionate and loved would be, you know, a bad decision for her life. And actually, you know, this just isn't true. I mean, there is a huge sector of our economy that is hungering for people who understand how to communicate in this way, in these ways. And more that's true as we move into the 21st century. We're well into it now. And we look at how images and communication and these languages of the arts are just at the forefront of how our you know, technology and how we're moving. It isn't just about making the phone. It's about the content in the phone. And that's where the arts come in, or on the iPad, or on the web, or, you know, that's where technology and art in a very real sense meet economically and in terms of, so there's a huge demand for that. And this young woman who goes and gets a master's master's in arts is likely to find a lot of employment, a lot more than many other degrees that you might pursue. And so I think there's a perception that parents have that that it is maybe even a little dangerous. We call it art fear, a big thought. A little dangerous, you know, for kids to get passionate about or to engage in that. I think what teachers can do and educators can do is to do these performances or these exhibitions, have the work, and then have a very thoughtful conversation with parents about, let me tell you how this work was made and what learning was taking place in the process. So it isn't just the product. It's really making explicit and visible what's happening and how it connects to kids being successful. And I think as educators, we have to bridge that and that we have many, many opportunities to do it that we just don't for some reason. We don't have those conversations. We don't say, look at this. Let me tell you what they had to be able to understand in order to produce this. And I think that's the place where parents go, oh, I get
it. I'm with you now.
Right. I'm with you now.
Yeah.
Let's see. We have time if we go very quickly here to take one more phone call. Let's speak with Sharon in Richardson. Hi, Sharon.
Hello.
Hi, Sharon.
Yes. I wanted to make a comment and maybe ask a question. I'm an educator as well as a scientist and an artist. And my father, who was a clinical psychologist, said that, and I believe this, you cannot really teach creativity. It's not something you can learn, like you can learn chemistry or math. Every one of us has this creative capability in us. It's something that we as educators bring forth, or we foster to bring this forth. But what we're doing in education now not only doesn't bring it forth, it almost inhibits it. When I was a graduate student, the graduate professor said one day, he said, you know what, in this class, there's not going to be ABCs. There's going to be an A or a pass. Well, it was like a pass or a fail. You either do this to pass or you don't, you fail. And then he organized us into small groups instead of facing forward, very rigid. Our classroom now has a very rigid structure.
You know, Sharon, I'm going to have to jump in here. I think we have your point, and I really appreciate it because we're running out of time. I think I'd love for you both to talk about this idea that the arts can be sort of that we can help children develop their artistic natures as opposed to teaching them how to be creative. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of different thought about this. Some people who feel you can't teach people to be creative, others have other perspectives. It reminds me of a story of, again, I'll go back to Nelson Goodman, who founded Project Zero. And apparently, in the 60s, someone asked Goodman, can you teach people to be creative? And Goodman, who was not didn't go on at great length, thought about it for a second and said yes. And the person said, how do you do it? And Goodman said, give them harder problems. And it's funny because if you ask me, I'd say, no, I don't think in those terms. But I do think in terms of giving young people the hardest problem you can come up with, the kinds of problems that we struggle with. Then you have to provide all the supports and the learning along the way that are needed for them to really come up with solutions and connect to all the disciplines that will help them to do that. But giving them hard problems is something that they, I think, appreciate.
Steve Seidel is director of the Arts and Education Program at the Harvard Graduate School of Education and former director of Project Zero. Gigi Antoni is president and CEO of Big Thought, based here in North Texas. It's been wonderful to have both of you on the show with us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah.
Today's show was part of KERA's American Graduate Initiative. The show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bilotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces our podcast. Jeff Whittington is Think's senior producer. You can learn more about the show and download the podcast every day free at kera.org/think. We always welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions emailed to think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.